Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, David, Jay, and Vicki will sit down with Dr. Bob Coleman, Associate Professor for Equine Sciences with the University of Kentucky. As always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
Hey, Jay.
David, you're looking a little tired this morning.
I didn't sleep real good last night. We've been up here in Lexington, and I never sleep the first night at a hotel. I just can't hardly sleep. So, I'm a little bit frazzled.
When you're only there one night, it don't give you any time to adjust, does it?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't, absolutely. But we've had a good time up here and enjoyed it and got to talk to some folks that we normally don't get to talk to. And today is no exception. With Dr. Bob Coleman, so a resident Canadian
person. Is that a thing?
It is, Canadian? Yeah, a resident Canadian.
Ask Adam Barnes about that.
I know it, right? Yeah.
I don't see your little Debbie cake in your pocket. Have you got it with you?
No, I do not, nor do I have that little other thing with the almonds in it.
I was about half ill still whenever I got up here, so I actually had a good night's sleep last night. I've been ready for one. So
yep. I was thinking he was a little more than half ill when you first got here, but
he looked a little peaked.
Yeah, in 24 hours, you have really made improvements.
Turn
I'll
around.
Say that.
Big turnaround.
Sometimes you just got to push through it, keep driving.
I hear you.
Dr. Bob Coleman's our guest today. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you here. We've been doing this show about a year and a half now, and you've been somebody that we've had on our plans for a long time, so we're glad to finally get that put together.
Well, it's great. I guess I'm sort of sorry that it caused you to have to drive all the way to Lexington to do this because, I could have driven to Western Kentucky. I know the way.
Well, we have these, we call them retreads. So, when you've been asked to be a guest more than once on our show, then you'll make the retread list. So the next time we'll just have you down we can come to Webster County because you've not been to Webster. So we'll record in Webster and then maybe do a little tour or something.
That would be exciting to get to see all the parts of the state in the different seasons, and in daylight's always a lot of fun.
Yeah, if there was a really good agent in Webster County, they could have probably already had you there. I'm just going to throw that out there because
David and I were once told by a guest sitting in your seat that we were fortunate because we got to work with the best ag agent in the state.
Cool.
And we said, "Who's that?" This was a friend of Vicky's.
In my mind, that's a pretty long list. Yeah, yep. I'm glad to be sitting with three of them.
Yeah, we agree, but glad to have you here. Well, starting off for our listeners, just tell a little bit about your background, how you came to be at UK, and the trails and experiences it took you to get here.
Well, it's a pretty windy trail. As you've already said, I am Canadian. I'm from Manitoba, Canada, so for a quick geography lesson, north of North Dakota. Probably the easiest. So while it's been a little cooler in temperature, yes, at one point in my life I was adapted to this. Do I like it? No. Cold is cold. And my goal was to move away from cold. So
good plan.
I left college and worked in the feed industry in Canada for a few years and then became an extension horse specialist in Alberta, Canada, and I was there for 18 years. And then finished up my education, got my PhD, and then essentially got recruited to come to Kentucky. And probably the thing that was the biggest draw to Kentucky was, and I think a lot of people would say it must have been the horses, it was actually the extension system that's here in Kentucky. We had a somewhat similar system in Canada. Specialist agents, that kind of thing, great teamwork across the province, and that changed. And to go to a place where there is, and I'm going to call it traditional extension, where there is a team of specialists and agents that cover the area that you're dealing with, was just something that I enjoyed and wanted to stay with. And so when the opportunity came, it was pretty easy to pack up the truck and make the drive and be here, and been here for almost 25 years now, and find that this is a system that I think a lot of people don't appreciate and they don't understand. But the fact that there's somebody that if you have a horse or you have something that you need an answer to, there's somebody in every one of the 120 counties that they might not know the answer and they don't need to know the answer. But like all of us, we just need to know how to find the answer. And if we can do that and work together, I mean, I find that working with agents across the state, I learn something every time I go. And not so much that it's new, but it's maybe how to package some information or, you know, that other last little piece of the puzzle. It's like, well, I hadn't thought about it that way. And that's sort of exciting, and it makes wanting to come to work every day. I think we have a lot of fun. I think we do really good work. We do help a lot of people, and it doesn't matter who you are. If you got a question, we'll try and find you the answer.
Well said.
We try to be that way as agents, but it's such a compliment to have specialists who have that same goal when it comes to the end of the day, and that's helping people and helping them work with the resources they have or helping them find the resources they need.
Exactly. And I mean, you can't be all things to all people, but with the team that's at the University of Kentucky, we can get pretty close. Mm-hmm.
I agree. And, one of the things that we've all done in the past is work with new agents. I've worked with several new agents over the last several years, and one of the things that I always try to make them aware of, and not just aware of it, but utilize it, is the wealth of knowledge that we have at our fingertips, so to say, you know, with our specialists, and that it is it's a two-way street, you know, that agents need specialists and specialists need agents. And when we make that work correctly and when we work together as a team, then that's really what makes the whole system work and be strong.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it was, you said that very well, and I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Good deal. Well, you're here. We're glad you're here. Not just on our show, but at UK. It's springtime. You came down to our end of the state not too long ago and did a program for our producers, a great program. One of the things that I'm thinking right now is tomorrow's the last day of March. We're fully into spring, and actually the way the weather patterns have gone, spring started several weeks early for the most part. One of the things that I think of with equine owners or any livestock owner this time of the year is that transition from stored feed to pastures. And it's a big nutritional difference. There's supplements that have to go along with them to make that change. But the problem we have this year is we have a lot of damaged pastures. We don't have the pastures to start off with that we normally do. So first, if you could, just talk a little bit about that nutritional change that we would have in the average year going from stored feed onto pasture. But also, let's talk about some of the challenges that landowners have this year, horse owners, producers, with the pasture situation.
You know, that this year is probably more of an example of what could go wrong or what the challenges actually are. But when you really think about it, I mean, it's a challenge every year. Mm-hmm. And as horse owners or livestock owners, we need to think about that. So what is my challenge for this year? But if it's a normal year, whatever that happens to look like, so we're going to go to a feed supply that's going to be really high on moisture. It's going to be very high on a dry matter basis in protein and digestible energy. So we are shifting from something that's not quite so nutritious to something that could be very nutritious. Now, the big thing is the fact they have to eat so much more of it because the dry matter is going to be low.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're drinking their water or eating their water, not walking to the tank. And that's always something that horse owners will say is like, my horses aren't drinking as much anymore. It's like, well, because they're eating water, folks. They're mm-hmm. they're getting what they need. So they may change a little bit. But I think the biggest thing is that it's the structure of the nutrient source that they're getting. So it is this lush, high-moisture feed that has a lot of soluble carbohydrates in it. So now all of a sudden our digestive system has to adapt. It's no different philosophically than what happens to us. When we go and all of a sudden eat some new food that we haven't had before and all of a sudden we have a little gastric distress. It's because the microbes that live in the horse's gut, and we have them in ours too, that they need to change with that new feed. So when we're adapting horses to a new feed source, we're really adapting the microbes. We're not adapting the horse per se. And, you know, there's all kinds of them. We've always sort of thought that, you know, kind of like in ruminants, that they're all in that one little locked up place. So in the horse, we've always thought about it's just the hindgut. So it's the cecum and the large colon. It's not true. Those microbes live from stomach to the tail. And so they are going to change. They're going to react to the food stuff. So slowing them down when we turn them out onto that grass. Now, the horses that are out on grass all the time, they are probably adapting easier because more of their nutrients have come from the pasture. They're not making a big switch from hauling them out four flakes of hay every day to just eating what's out there. So as the grass changes from that dried forage for those that actually had enough left in the fall to let them winter on it, to the new growing grass, okay, they're adapting as the grass is growing, so that's a little bit easier on the horse. Whereas those that are waiting till that pasture is hopefully 6 to 8 inches tall and not panicking or getting excited when it's 4 inches tall and kicking them out and saying, oh, good, the grass is here, I don't have to feed hay anymore, those are the ones that are in trouble, and we need to adapt them to it. But it's no different than if we were changing hay.
Well, that's a new sound, isn't it? Not one we've had before.
Oh, never. Oh, it happens in class all the time. And it's never my phone. I actually brought it with me. I usually don't have it. But back to where we were. So we need to take some time. And if I'm going from that dried feed primarily to the pasture, I want to take 2 or 3 days with just a small amount of time out there. So a cup, an hour. I mean, a lot of people will say, well, it should be 30 minutes for a day or two, and then an hour for a day or two. While that technically is probably correct, none of us can do that. Most horse owners that we're going to deal with that have 2 or 3 horses that they're using for their recreational activities, well, they're also working. So to say that, you know, turn them out at 9 o'clock in the morning and then bring them in at 9:30. Well, I left for work at 8, so not quite sure how I can make that work. And now I guess you could do it when you got home. You could turn them out at 6 o'clock at night and bring them in before the sun went down. That would make it easier to find them. But I think if you could go an hour and a half, and gradually increase that over 10 to 14 days, that would be ideal. If you think about it from another livestock species, if you're taking cattle and you're putting them on from that, you're putting calves on feed, I mean, you're probably taking 28 days to get them on feed. So theoretically, we should be thinking about the same thing. 28 days is a lovely number and a great way to get them adapted. You're probably not going to last that long. The other thing that I'd always suggest is before you turn them out, make sure that they've had very palatable hay that they're used to eating, and make sure they're full. So they don't go out hungry, they don't go out with, and they're gonna figure you out. They're gonna realize that after about 3 days, I'm getting turned out when I see the school bus go by, or they hear, the cars driving around, or something changing on the farm, that they realize that you're getting ready to turn them out, and they will figure it out. I promise you, some horses will figure it out in 2 days, some it might take them 4. And they might be the ones that really like the hay, so they're not quite so quick to worry about what you're doing. And they're probably also the ones that are figured out. If I eat all my hay and then I'm going to have all that time on grass, I get more. So, I don't know. But that's the biggest thing. Pay attention to them. Watch them. How are they doing making that adjustment? The biggest thing we worry about is excessive soluble carbohydrate, which could cause some founder issues. Spring founder is not uncommon to most horse owners. The worst of it is once the horse founders once, they're just going to wait for the next time to do it again. So, if I've had one that's had some issues, I'm going to be a little more diligent. I'm probably going to be a little slower turning them out. And I'm going to wait till there's grass. Like, wait till there's more grass, because the older it is, even at, you know, the fact that it might be 8 inches tall, the older it is, it's going to be a lower nutrient density, and it's just going to be easier on the horse. And it, if it's easier on the horse, it's going to be easier on the horse owner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the, Dr. Bob, a lot of us have these dry lots that our horses have been in for quite some time, because, you know, obviously we had the drought last year, and we just, I mean, the pastures have not recovered like we thought they were going to, and I mean, it's pretty tough. But, you know, what advice would you have to somebody that may be in that situation, that, you know, that maybe they do a little rotational grazing, however, they've you know, they've got some problems that occurred last year and have kind of rolled into this year. What would you know, kind of what strategy would you give to them?
I actually think some of them are lucky. Right? From the standpoint, if you've developed a dry lot and you've developed a management system to handle that, as long as you still have some kind of hay that you can feed, mm-hmm. I think you're in a better position to take a step back and say, okay, I'm going to wait till I get my grass right. I'm going to wait on that, because grass and horses and all things agriculture, I mean, what's the one strong characteristic everybody that's successful has? They're patient. Mm-hmm. They wait. I mean, sometimes we don't, because we get impatient. That's usually when it doesn't mm-hmm. work very well. But if you have a place where you can keep them, and even if it's you get a you can turn them out for a couple hours and just give them some different environment to be outside. They're going to eat a little grass. But I think part of that is the strategy, is figuring out, how can I wait till I get my fields back, my pasture fields, my paddock fields back to the way I need them to be? Mm-hmm. Because as soon as we turn them out too early, they're going to tear it up. Mm-hmm. I mean, and if you watch horses, I mean, everybody talks about the lawns and the roughs that where horses graze. Oh, it's because of the manure. No, it's not. It's because of what's tasty. Mm-hmm. It's no different than people at a buffet. What disappears first on the buffet? The stuff that's the most palatable.
It's too easy, and I've done it myself. When you start to see that green grass, think, oh boy, I got to get them on grass. And oftentimes the end result is tearing up that spot, as you mentioned. But at the same time, we're usually not meeting our horses' nutrition needs with that new pasture either. Not by itself.
Not, you're right. You've got to be able to feed them something else. You've got to think about what is the plan. And I think, David, that the strategy is the thing. What is my strategy going to be? And planning for it. So if you decide that we're going to use the dry lot, we're going to use some pasture, we're going to maximize sources of nutrients in order to meet the horse's nutrient requirements, as you said, Jay. So if I'm going to maybe start adding in a little concentrate so I can make my pasture go further, well, that also needs to be an adaption period. That also needs to be 2 weeks to 3 weeks of getting them on to the level of concentrate that we're going to use, and I don't care what it is. It could be rolled oats, but let's not just, if we need to get them to 6 pounds of rolled oats, we're not doing it on Tuesday morning if they haven't had anything on Monday. Can you do it and have them survive? Sure, some of us have, and some of us have made some very wild dietary changes on horses mm-hmm. in less than, you know, I'm talking, you know, 21 to 28 days. I've done it in 24 hours, mm-hmm. but I also stayed in the barn for 48 hours, essentially. You know, it's like, because I had to watch to make sure that everything was going to go the way I needed it to. And again, most of us don't have that opportunity. So if we're going to have changes, we need to plan for them and think about it. And even if that grass, and you're right, Jay, I mean, we've all done that. It's like, oh, the grass is getting green. I don't have to feed hay. I can do something else. It'll be really good. It will be really good for the horse. True, when they're adapted to it. Prior to that, it won't be so good for them. So, you know, just having a plan and thinking it all the way through. And sometimes a friend of mine that's a horse trainer always used to tell us when we'd be working horses at the college he worked at, is if you want to get there fast, just slow down.
Mm.
That's true. Good advice.
It's good advice on a lot of fronts.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
That's right. You know, and that also applies to if you change feeds. You know, when and if you're changing the brand of feed or the kind of feed, all of those feeds have a little bit different makeup about the ingredients that they have. And if you're going to change feeds in a short amount of time, you really need to kind of watch, don't you?
You do. And sometimes you have to do it faster than you want to, and we all get that. But that's even included in hay. Mm-hmm. There's some interesting research that they looked at, you know, change in hay. And it's like, and it could be from the same producer, but
yep. Different cutting.
Different cutting, different field, different, you know, making hay, of course. And I think that's one of the things from a horse owner's perspective. Making hay is a piece of cake. You have a green, you know, field of grass or whatever, and you just run in it, you cut it down, you wait a day or two, you roll it all up, call it good, and it's done. And it's like, it's not that simple. And as you said, Jay, a different cutting. But even just the impact that you could have in a field of the one cutting that, mm-hmm. yeah, I got to bale most of it, mm-hmm. but then I had to wait three or four more days, or I had to tet it or rake it differently, and now all of a sudden that hay's different. Mm-hmm. And we see that, and even in a single, you know, pass, we got everything off that field in one time. I mean, there might be some plant material in that is just part of the environment of that hay field. And we've seen it in years past where all of a sudden everybody's saying, well, I think there's something in my hay that's making my horse's digestive system upset. And it's like, well, how come now in January, and you've been feeding this hay since November, you're seeing this plant material? Is it because it's finally in those bales off the field? Probably. Is it because you just became more observant? Maybe. Is it causing a problem? Possibly, but it could be circumstantial, could be coincidence. And trying to explain that to people is that when you're cutting hay, yeah, there's a patch of weeds there. You just as soon not go over that. But how does a hay producer, how do you do that? It's hard. I mean, you might go around, but then all of a sudden you got this funny looking field, and you might not actually see it. But it gets baled up anyway, because I haven't run a lot of hay equipment, but I've run enough to realize that I'm, number one, no good at it, and number two, it's really, really hard to do it well. And so, yeah, all of those things, it's about paying attention. I had a friend ask me what I thought was the characteristic of a really good horseman. And I said, it's somebody that's really observant. Mm-hmm. They just see what's going on. And he said, well, what about when they're riding? I said, it's still an observation. It's because you are observant. And I think people, and you can get carried away. You can become detail-oriented, and you can pick fault in everything. And that will drive all of the county agents crazy, is because it's like, I saw this plant. And it's like, it is one plant in 800 bales. It's probably not that big a deal. Yeah. Yeah. But at least they saw it. And maybe we need to celebrate that okay, you are paying attention. And let's walk through that. Here becomes a great educational opportunity to say, okay, yep, that one plant in there, well, that's actually an alfalfa plant, so it's okay. And I think there's those going along. But, yeah, it's about strategy and being observant.
I know the in the evenings, like my wife, she puts the mules up, and then I turn them out in the morning. I don't pay a lot of attention. I'm the hired hand. I just feed the mules, and then she'll come in and say, well, did you see such and such on this mule? And I said, well, no, not really. She said, well, you need to look at it in the morning. So she is way more observant. And having two people that kind of look after livestock, it helps too, because that one person may not pay attention like myself, and she does.
Two people and two mules.
Right.
Think about that, as compared to your herd of cattle. You walk through a herd of cattle, you might see something, even being observant, you might see something now that you didn't see this morning.
That's right.
Walked right past it. But with two animals, and I think that's one of the advantages a lot of our horse owners have, is the fact that they have one to two to five. I don't know what the average ownership is on backyard horses. You know, we have small productions. But having a fewer number of animals, it's easier to be observant over all of them. Just an observation.
It is. I mean, and if you look at it in other livestock production, I mean, at a feed yard, how many pen riders do they have?
Right.
I mean, it's not one pen rider for everybody. There's a bunch of them, and we know that they don't get everything. I mean, nobody can. I mean, and to say, you know, yeah, we got to be really observant. And are you going to miss stuff? Of course you are. And don't beat yourself up over that. Learn from it. And there are a lot of things. And that is one of the things that horse owners, when they pay attention, is understanding what's normal. Mm-hmm. So for David's wife, I mean, she knows what those mules are supposed to look like.
Growing up, we kept a legal pad in the feed room of the barn. And my dad would leave notes. Check this. Look at that. And oftentimes, because he traveled for work, that's how we communicated. That was before the days of cell phones or text messages. But we would leave notes for each other, and my uncle would do that too. If he happened to come by, he'd pop in, hey, here's something I saw. And that was handy for us.
Well, I mean, yeah, being a good communicator, but also from you as an owner and an observer, having that legal pad, or if you want to keep the notes in your phone, I mean, I don't really care where you put it down, but write it down. If it's something that you saw on Tuesday, write it down, because let's say it turns in or something else happens on Saturday and the vet's out there. I mean, noticed anything? Well, I think, but
forgot it.
But I forgot it. Or I mean, I always tell people that if you're going to body condition score your horse to see how you're doing and how your management's working out, write it down. Mm-hmm. I mean, do it every week. No, I think that's a little overkill, but do it once a month and write it on the calendar. Mm-hmm. Write it somewhere, because I don't care how good your memory is, you will forget. And if you have five horses and they're all bay horses, or you have five really nice red mules, which red mule was it?
They start to all look alike.
They do. They do.
Like black cows.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, and being consistent, too, I'm sure is important, too, with anything. But, you know, a lot of times if you're consistent with whatever it is you're doing, you are also going to start to see some inconsistencies that are going to show up. But if you're not having your eyes on them every day or having some kind of that routine and consistent behavior, you know, that's you could be more apt to miss things, too, I would think. Now, that's you know, a thought.
I think that's pretty real. I mean, you go out and you know, the two mules are chasing each other. You know, they're racing to get to the gate. Okay. Then you go out there and the one, I know mules are smart enough not to do that, but
that's true.
But if one's, you know, lagging behind, you know, if they always come up together like they're hitched as a team, and now we got one that's kind of hanging back, I mean, that should ring a bell. You should just, and it could be nothing more than he just didn't feel like coming up because whatever, but at least notice that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or he's a pain in the butt, one of the two, because they could be like that.
I've heard from mule people that never happens. on the good ones.
Whatever.
So you're supposed to go home and tell your wife she needs good mules. I think that was the message.
I'm not telling her nothing. She tells me. I don't tell her nothing on those mules, I promise.
You talked a little bit earlier. You mentioned the nutrient requirements. I think, you know, Jay alluded to that, and then you spoke of that. So for our novice listeners out there, just talk a little bit about the, you know, the nutrient needs and the requirements that especially we talked about those backyard folks, you know, those that's just pleasure horses. They've got a couple or three or whatever, but if they're new horse owners, and just talk about the things that they need to know and those nutrient requirements and the importance of meeting those requirements.
And I mean, I think that's really an easy fix personally, but as trained as a nutritionist, that is kind of the way my brain works. But you're right, and typically the biggest thing we're worrying about is getting enough calories into them. That being said, for a lot of people, they do a really good job of getting enough in, but they don't know when to stop. And so we see a lot of horses that are carrying a lot more condition. And I had mentioned it earlier. So there's the body condition scoring system. There's two publications that horse owners can get through their county agents that talk about it. What if my horse is too fat or what if it's too thin? The bottom line is, we should be looking for horses and for mules that, I'd like to see just a little cover over their ribs. I don't want to see a lot of ribs sticking out. A little different on mules because of how they're built over their top line. But get your hands on them and feel for those fat deposits. It's real easy to sort of say, oh, well, it doesn't work on thoroughbreds, or it doesn't work on walking horses, or it doesn't work on mules. It's like it wasn't designed for some of those, but it works if you get your hands on them and actually feel, can I feel fat deposits there? So I'd like to be able to not see any ribs, but I want to be able to feel them pretty easy. I'd like to be able to feel the withers, but feel the fat deposits around it. Same down their back and over their tail head. And then I don't want to feel a lot of fat in their neck. And certainly in a mule or a donkey, I don't want to feel any, because that's you're feeding way too much if that starts to show up. And the hard part is if it gets there, it's hard getting rid of it. Mm-hmm. But I want to look at that. I don't get as carried away with protein, because in a lot of cases, if we're meeting the horse's calorie requirement with what we typically feed, we're going to have enough protein in the diet. But probably the one thing that from a lot of people, depending on what livestock you grew up with or where your experiences are, so we'll see a lot of the nutrient analysis come back on forages that'll have TDN. That's really wonderful. Doesn't matter for horses because we don't use TDN. Mm-hmm. Haven't worried about TDN in horse diets for, probably 45 years. But I'm going to look at that. And then I'm also going to pay attention from how I meet the nutrient requirements just relative to how much I'm feeding. It's not uncommon that people will read in the popular press that horses need 2.5% of their body weight in feed per day. That depends on the feed. Mm-hmm. I can take some pretty decent quality Kentucky hay that's clean, doesn't have any dust or mold in it, and palatable. If it's got a digestible energy value of about 0.85, less than 20 pounds of hay will meet their energy requirement. And I don't have to feed 2 scoops of concentrate. And if I feed 2.5%, now on that 1,100-pound horse, I'm up to 27, almost 28 pounds of hay a day, and I'm about 140% of their energy requirements. So if we wonder why we have fat horses, it's because we will not practice intake control.
Mm-hmm. I can add to that the purpose or the use of what that animal is. When we think about backyard horses, we think about pleasure horses. The predominance of those horses that are out there are trail ridden, mm-hmm. which is a Saturday or Sunday afternoon event for the most part. A day, maybe 2 days, if you go to spend the weekend at a camp somewhere, of higher energy needs than the other 5 days of the week. They're not in the log woods skidding out logs every day. So those nutrient requirements may change throughout the week. But I agree with you that the average horse is overfed. You mentioned protein, and that's the specific thing I've always kind of had a little bit of an issue with, because I've done it myself. I've seen people walk in to the feed store, and they go right to the bag with the highest protein content because that's what they need. Mm-hmm. And they're feeding dairy quality alfalfa hay to go along with it, and they're burning horses up. Their kidneys won't take that very, very long term.
Well,
talk a little bit about the use requirements of pleasure horses versus, horses that are spending their working
horses.
Life, yeah, a performance horse, right? Yeah.
Well, and that's a good point. And so your example of that horse that I'm going to ride on Saturday, and you said 1 or 2 days, I was thinking 1 or 2 hours.
Yeah, that's right.
And even when they go to the camps, it's like, mm-hmm. you don't ride all day long.
Don't have any time to sit around, drink beer.
That's right. Well, and
Which is why you go to camp.
That's right, which is why you actually go. The horses are just an excuse.
That's right. But also, in a lot of cases, certainly as we transition from winter to spring and into summer when we haven't been riding, we're not fit enough to ride more than an hour. I mean,
absolutely,
you're going to be hurting,
yes.
And that's why you have to sit around. You'd be better off if you stood up and walked around. But
right.
That being said, but I think, you know, the requirements is the horses start to do more. So being aware of how hard is your horse working. So, and again, if they're working hard, they need calories. If we use most of the common feedstuffs to add calories in their diet, we don't need to add any extra protein. Mm-hmm. And while, I mean, we worry about all that extra protein, the other place that that's going to hurt, especially if you're keeping them in the barn, is you. Because you're going to increase your ammonia content in the barn, and so you're going to get it above what the people that tell us what's safe and healthy for us, you're going to be way, because once you can smell it, you're way above the safety mm-hmm. level, way above. And so think about it. You're in there cleaning and doing stuff for an hour, maybe two out of the day. Poor old Nellie's in there for mm-hmm. 18 hours, and she's got to breathe all that stuff in. And when we want them to do something, and athletic horses need to be able to breathe, so we've already just kind of messed with them. So you're right. I mean, everybody looks at protein, even in the hay they buy. Oh, it's 12% crude protein. It's a better quality. But it's not better than that much better than 9 for a horse that only needs 9%. Mm-hmm. I don't want to buy something. I want to feed something that I'm going to clean out of the stall. That just is a huge waste in my mind. The only time where the calorie thing might change, and even still, when we've got some of those commercial feeds that are high-fat feeds, so they're more calorie-dense, you don't have to feed as much.
Right.
But I'm gonna go way out on a limb because I haven't actually calculated, but I'm going to guesstimate that probably 95% of the performance horse diets for mid-performance level, I never have to worry about protein, ever. I mean, am I going to be over? Absolutely, I'm going to be over because I'm going to feed enough hay, and I'm going to feed enough hay. I have magic numbers in my head that, you know, I like to be at a 1.5% of body weight of hay minimum, regardless of what we're doing. I don't mind going up. I might go down if there is no hay. So, you know, some of those folks in Western Kentucky that are having to use their strategy of their dry lot, because and we're trying to make our hay go longer, I'm going to back it up a little bit. But I'm also going to back it up and feed it in a way that if I'm giving them X number of pounds a day, I want it in a way that they're going to eat all X pounds. I don't want them sleeping in it. I don't want them digging into the stall. I don't want to waste any of it because I don't have that part. I don't have that option. If I've only got enough hay for 100 days till my grass comes up, in, or I got something that I can turn them out in July, and I'll only have that, I got to make it last. Mm-hmm. I can't lose any of it. I know there's going to be some waste. There's intrinsic waste that we just have to deal with, but let's not make it worse.
Yep.
And we do that. I mean, I see that all the time. Well, we're going to still feed them hay while they're learning to graze grass, and we're throwing out the hay on the ground. And it's like, would you just, I mean, give me that percentage of your hay budget and, you know, donate it to the Cooperative Extension because we'll do good things with it because you aren't. So you got to, there's so many little things that we get carried away with. We think about how hard our horses are working. The pleasure horses that go to the camp for a day's ride, horses in training, if they're really in training because we're going to the, to the team ropings, okay, that's a little different. But, well, I ride 3 days a week for a half an hour. That's not working all that hard. You're not much above mare maintenance.
Yep,
and in a lot of cases, why do we feed concentrate? So it gets them to come to the barn. It's a management
tip. Only reason that I feed it.
Rattle that can.
That's right.
Well, it's exactly right, but... But don't get carried away. I mean, you don't need to. I mean, Wayne Kirby's not here, but it's like he always bugs me. How much is in that scoop? And it was like, I'll figure it out for you, Wayne. I promise you, I'll figure it out. But you know, and lots of people say, well, it's a 3-quart scoop, so that's got to be 3 pounds. It's like, maybe. Are you sure it's a 3-quart scoop? I actually had a place one day a long time ago, and they were feeding their brood mares, and they were having some significant problems. And I said, well, what do you feed? And he said, well, we've, you know, they get 2 scoops. And he said, they're 3-pound scoops, so I weighed it. They were 7.5-pound scoops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a big difference.
Mm. Yeah, they were getting 15 pounds of grain per meal. No, but he said, we only do it once a day. And it was like, it's still 15 pounds of grain at one time. And I can tell you why you're having trouble.
Yeah.
I was like, so think about what you're doing. You know what I mean? And if you're not sure, just ask questions.
You know, rarely do we ever do this show, regardless of who our guest is, or even if we don't have a guest, we rarely do this show what one of us don't pick up on an idea for another show. And just in the last few minutes, you've touched on 2 or 3 things that have been personal thoughts of mine before, but then you've added some to them. But I can already think of additional shows we might do at some point in time. Barn ventilation, I think, is a big, big one. 2 things that have always been a pet peeve, I guess, of mine is, one is broodmare nutrition. You know, specific nutrition for the broodmare, especially in regards to hay. And I think that leads into the big bugaboo that everybody wants to avoid, and that's the myths and the facts of fescue. Mm-hmm. I would love to do a show just on the myths and the facts of fescue regarding our horses. I have my own thoughts on that. I'd love to hear yours sometime, but that's another show for another day.
Yeah, it's a show within itself, really. I mean, honestly.
I almost think that broodmare nutrition and the fescue show could be back-to-back companions, because they, you know, growing up in a broodmare operation, we ran them on fescue year-round. But bred mares, that last 60 days, we'd bring them in, we'd dry lot them, we'd start them on a little bit better quality hay, gradually increasing that till we got to the point of it was good alfalfa hay. We always were able to avoid problems with prenatal issues and some of the birth-related issues, tough sacks and things like that. But we also were getting to that point of the mare getting the energy she needed for milk production.
Yep. Well, and that's the other thing, and it also goes with all horses. You know, if there's going to be a change, so we're going to start riding really hard. We're getting our mules ready so that we can go on long rides where we're going to be riding 3 or 4 days, and we're going to ride hard. Mm-hmm. We're changing their conditioning. We're changing their nutrient. We're building them up over time. We're not just going to all of a sudden make a change. Broodmares are exactly the same, and you know, there's sort of 2 parts to that: is dealing with it at the end of gestation, but then also getting the people to realize that, yeah, she's pregnant. You are not feeding her for 2 1,100-pound horses. You just aren't, but they will. And it's like, can we appreciate what the horse requires and feed for that based on what we have to feed?
As it requires it, because that changes over an 11-month period.
You bet it does. I mean, same with your conditioning, your conditioning, and you're feeding your performance horses and your recreational riding horses and the backyard horse that maybe – instead of increasing their nutrient intake, we need to be holding the line and saying, yes.
Maintaining it.
Yes. And if you were to lose a little weight, wouldn't be such a bad thing.
Might have been fat to begin with.
Yeah. And appreciating that. And that's hard to do. But
I had a friend of mine tell me one time about, we were talking about longevity of horses. And, you know, he was telling me that feeding and how people feed their horses has a lot to do with longevity, as far as, you know, being able to do certain things. If they're feeding them the alfalfa like Jay was talking about, and feeding them a grain concentrate on top of that, he said they just don't last that long when you're doing that.
Well, and I think it's because it happens with people too. I mean, if we would actually balance our nutrient intake with our nutrient need, and maybe have a little exercise thrown in for fun, that, you know, it would do that. There's a lot of feeds that people don't like. That, you know, I heard all about it when I moved here, that how bad fescue was. Mm-hmm. Well, and I understood the endophyte issues. I mean, I get that. I was around in a scientific community when they were trying to figure out what was causing those problems, when they didn't know it was fescue. Mm-hmm. I mean, they thought it was selenium. They thought it was all kinds of things. So I've understood that for a long time. But when I got here and I got looking at nutrient analysis of fescue hay that was put up at the right time, I was like, I'm feeding this stuff. If they'll eat it, I'm feeding it because this stuff's pretty good. You know, not alfalfa hay, but it was pretty good. And, you know, the biggest thing is you know, if they'll eat it and eat it at the level I need them to, it's good. Now, if we've got some of that really high-quality feed, getting them to eat it at the level that – getting the owner to feed it at the level I need it to be fed at to meet the requirements is like, yeah, but it's just a little tiny pile. It's like – and it only took them an hour and a half to consume their – that's right. And that's what our issue is. And so now what we're going to do, we're going to go find something that I jokingly call rice cakes. I want them to eat it, but I don't want it to have it. It doesn't have to have anything in it. I just want to occupy their time. I want to keep their gut health.
Filler.
Yep. But it has to go through. It has to be palatable enough that it goes all the way through. I don't want something that's going to log jam somewhere in the cecum because that'll cause us endless grief.
Worst problem.
Yep. But I think there's a lot of those things, and there's a lot of those myths and old wives' tales about what you can and you can't use. And the interesting thing about some of those is they're true, and some of the good stuff is true. Mm-hmm. You know, why people do what they do. I mean, if you look back at some of the old-time extension publications on how to feed horses, they didn't talk about protein and energy. They talked about carbonaceous feeds and nitrogen feeds, mm-hmm. and they would balance stuff. And one of my favorite ones was, can you feed corn stalks or corn stover to horses? And it's like, yes, you can, as long as it's properly balanced with a good source of carbon and nitrogen like oats and alfalfa hay. <It's> like,
so, works fine if you do that, right?
If you do that, and it's like, okay, so that's the filler. It's giving them something to do, but we know we got enough other good stuff going through. It's going to keep that gut healthy and things moving through, and it'll work. So, you know, you look at what those old-time, highly observant, very, very knowledgeable horsemen did, and it's like, can we just think about what they did just for a minute? I wish some of those good old boys were still around that we could talk to. And it's like, why did, you know, those guys from the early 1900s, why did you do what you do? Mm-hmm. And how did you make it work? And they did, and I hear people now that say, well, you know, the horse has to have warmed water and it has to be this, that, and the next thing. Those farm horses, when did they get watered? After they ate, 7 o'clock at night when they got turned out. They went to the trough or the pond, which I know we're not supposed to go to the pond, but that's how they got taken care of, and they didn't.
Sometimes we can have too many options to choose from. You know, we hear that term information overload, and that happens so much when you go to – look up something, there is so much right there, it just gets overwhelming sometimes. And you know, I think what you're talking about, sometimes there's way too many choices out there for these horse owners to choose from, and they don't know what to choose from,
like what's on the internet.
Yes,
right.
Yes,
that's all true.
Well, you know, that's a good point, David, because I was thinking of something that Dr. Bob said earlier. I bet those guys that you wish were still around, I bet they all were observant. They spent the days with their animals, so they got to see every little change throughout the day and across the time. But also, they didn't have the internet.
Right.
they didn't have those outside influences. That work came from that knowledge came from experience.
And their outside sources were probably their friends and colleagues that they talked to.
That all did the same thing.
Yeah, and they talked to them after church.
Yep.
Or at the feed store on Saturday when they'd gone in to get something, and it was like, so have you tried this, or you know, I'm dealing with whatever. But it was also back to when horses were, from a farm perspective, they were the machinery, but they were also a farm product. I mean, people raised horses so that they could sell them, and it was a farm commodity, and yes, we're a farm commodity now, but it's just a whole different marketplace that we're going to. And, we get assaulted with so much information. And some of it we need to take with a grain of salt, but But even from a feeding standpoint, you go to the feed store, there is so much there. It's all great information. It's all correct. But it's like, how do I understand? Like, how do I process it? How do I know that this bag is or isn't different than this bag? It is a challenge, and somebody said, you know, those new horse owners, those new people to rural lifestyle, boy, it's hard on them.
And just understanding, too, from a livestock standpoint, just understanding the purpose of your animal. You've talked about that this entire time, is what is the purpose of this horse? And that is going to make a big difference on what you need to be feeding that animal.
And putting a plug in for our county extension offices, this is a great place to get the information that you need. If you've got a selection of four or five different kinds of horse feed and you need some information about that, take those tags and go to your extension office. That extension agent may not be able to help you right off, but he can get a hold of Dr. Coleman. He can get a hold of other people at the university that can help you make a decision about the right kind of horse feed that you need to be feeding. I mean, that's what we're here for. That's what we want to help everybody with.
And it's across the state. I mean, I find it always amazing when I talk to horse people and they say, well, I mean, I'm not a farmer. I can't go to the county office, the extension office. It's like, well, do you live in this county? Yeah, then you can go.
Yeah,
that's right.
And quite often it'll be, and kind of to pick up on David's point, it's like, well, they might not know about horses. Well, what's your question? I mean, it's like I was at a place on Monday with a county agent, and they'd already bought the grass seed for doing their pastures. I think they had it given to them, but whatever. And it was like, do you think we got the right stuff? And the agent could walk over there, take the tag off the bag, go through it, and say, okay, here's what it is, and here's why this is good. This one's going to do this. It was a mix. But right there, he had information about the grass. Then I got to give the information about the horse. So it was a great team effort. And do I have to know everything about all the grasses? I should. Am I going to? No. That's what you guys are for.
And you know, the best thing about both of those things that you and David both just said is if you're local, if you've paid your taxes, everything we do is free.
Yep.
I mean, you come in. I have dealt with countless new to the rural lifestyle, as you mentioned, or maybe even urban people who had a garden question that did not know they could come to the extension office and get 99% of the information they needed free of charge. And that's something we've been able to do for a lot of years. We've had to charge for a few things. You know, there's a few publications out there that required a charge, but it's only because of the quality of that publication. And you get a whole lot for that, for what little bit of money you have to spend. So
best deal in town.
All good things. Well, one of the things we always do as we wrap this show up is we like to give our listeners what we call a timely tip. We didn't get a chance to discuss this, with you beforehand, but as listening to you, I've been making notes over here, and I'm thinking of the best timely tip for this week is springtime. We're going out on new pastures. Give your horse plenty of time to adapt. Going from that dried stored feed to pastures. Green pastures they contain a lot of moisture, so you may see that water intake go down a little bit. But understand that it's a long process adapting to that grass, and you may need to keep feeding along the lines so that a horse isn't over-consuming on that green pasture. So
that would be exactly it. Give them some time to change and be patient.
Yeah, be observant.
Sounds good. Well, Dr. Coleman, we appreciate you being here with us today and our host for this week's information, and special thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.